The Tony Greig Show.
Welcome to the Tony Greig Show on Crick Info Talk.
News this week.
In the first match in the one-day series between the West Indies and Australia, ugly crowd scenes marred Australia's comprehensive victory with fans hurling plastic bottles onto the field of play. Play was suspended for more than 10 minutes with Australia just one wicket from victory after fans reacted angrily to the uncertainty surrounding the dismissal of Darren Sammy. Sean Marsh struck a fluent 81 on his debut as Australia registered an easy 84-run win. Brad Haddin, the new Aussie keeper, added an even 50 to propel Australia to 8 for 273 after they were sent in on a slow pitch under cloudy skies. The West Indies is then bundled out for 189 in the 40th over with Nathan Bracken once again doing so well, taking 4 for 31. The second match of the five-game series saw Australia take a 2-0 lead as they handed their hosts a thrashing on an awkward batting wicket in Grenada. After crashing to 35 for 3 from 9 overs, batting first, the Aussies built patiently through Michael Hussey and Michael Clarke, and it certainly was a very slow wicket. They ended up with 213 for 5 before reducing the West Indies to 140 for 8 in 41 overs and winning by 63 runs on the Duckworth-Lewis method. Looks to me as if Australia have a good chance here of a clean sweep in this one-day series. Last week I mentioned how New Zealand were denied victory when the second one-day international was abandoned with only 6 balls left to be bowled to constitute a result. Well, things have improved for them since then, although controversy continues to surround the series. Tim Southee and Kyle Mills were the New Zealand heroes as they won a tense, slow-scoring one-day international in Brisbane to level the series 1-1. Southee took 4 for 38 and Mills won the man of the match, awarded for hitting 47 runs and taking 2 for 42 as England lost by 22 runs. England let New Zealand off the hook, no doubt about that, allowing them to make 182 after they'd been in huge trouble on 75 for 6. Then England also collapsed horribly from 62 for 2 to 64 for 6 as Southee took 3 wickets in quick succession, and it may have been a midsummer's day, but it was bitterly cold in the West Country, and with overcast conditions almost from the start to the finish of the game, it was always going to be a good day for bowlers, and so it turned out to be. Then came a remarkable one-day international. New Zealand won when England somehow allowed the last man in, Mark Gillespie, to hit 2 from the final ball of the match when there really should only have been 1. He scampered the single, came back for the overthrow when Graham Swans, shy at the stumps, was not backed up. It just seemed to me that the England players were all over the place, rushing for stumps. Not sure why, but that was the case. Earlier, Grant Elliott was guiding the tourists home when he was controversially run out as he was injured in a collision with England's Ryan Sidebottom. The umpires asked the England captain, Collingwood, if he was upholding the appeal, which he did, but later admitted that he'd made a bad decision and he apologised to the New Zealanders. Mind you, you should have heard the squealing that emanated from Ian Smith, the New Zealand commentator. You would have thought that it was another underarm. Sure, Collingwood got it wrong, but these things happen from time to time in the heat of the moment. I must say I was surprised that one or two of the other senior England players didn't have a quick word to Collingwood. If that had happened, I'm sure that they would have withdrawn the appeal. The wicket could have been crucial, but England's modest 245 was not enough. This victory gave New Zealand a 2-1 lead in the series. And I can tell you, after all the incidents, the view of the New Zealand players on the balcony was something else. They were over the moon. As if the England captain, Paul Collingwood, had not had a bad enough day, Collingwood was found guilty of a level 3 ICC code of conduct breach following his side's failure to bowl their overs in the required time during their defeat against the New Zealand team on that day, and he will be out of the series decider and, indeed, the first test against South Africa. Kevin Peterson was appointed captain, but things didn't improve for England. They were also defeated at Lord's as New Zealand took a 3-1 series lead with a 51-run win. The Kiwis were struggling at 71 for 3, but Stiris smashed 3 sixes in an unbeaten 87. Chasing 267, England started well, but Peterson made just 6 and Daniel Vittori seized control with 3 for 32. Only Owai Shah with 69 made a decent contribution. The more I look at this England team, the more one realises that Kevin Peterson has to fire if they're going to succeed in the one-day game. Well, the Asia Cup has been predictable so far, in so much as there haven't been any major upsets. The major battle is for the spot in the finals, and that will be decided by the Super 4 round involving India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka and Bangladesh. On form, I'm predicting an India versus Sri Lanka final, but I do so reluctantly because I know Pakistan are capable of upsetting any side on their day, and let's face it, it's usually the Sri Lankans that they beat with their eyes closed. Unlike most other teams, Pakistan thrive in situation when there's little going in their favour. On current form, though, Sri Lanka are favourites to beat Pakistan in their important Super 4 match. Their win against Bangladesh in the group game has already given them a 2-point cushion, while Pakistan have to recover from the disappointing loss to India, which was made worse by Umar Gul being ruled out of the tournament. There are also indications of a rift between the Pakistan selectors and the captain, surprise, surprise, with Shoaib Akhtar appearing to blame the selection committee after the loss to India. It is possible that Bangladesh, of course, could pull off a surprise, but I doubt it.
What's eating Tony Gregg?
The Zimbabwe issue and what we as a cricket community should do is a complex question. If I was certain that every dollar of the millions of dollars that the ICC gives Zimbabwe because of their status in the game was going to the betterment of the game in Zimbabwe, I would be very reluctant to withdraw support to the Zimbabwe cricket fraternity. My problem is that those who are in charge of the game in Zimbabwe have not denounced Mugabe. They are, I suppose, in a catch-22 situation. If they did, they'd probably be thrown out and replaced. Now, if this did happen, we would then know that the time was right to act against their replacements. In the meantime, I think it's fair to assume that there has been some shark practice, and this much, from what I can gather, was exposed in the ICC investigation into Zimbabwe cricket. There is no doubt that the action of the Friends of Zimbabwe have helped prop them up. India is the main culprit here, and it seems that they will continue to help them in the knowledge that in return Zimbabwe will always vote as India wants. South Africa has also done nothing to help the situation, although they now seem to be reviewing their stance. This week at the ICC meetings, we will know more. If it was left to me, I would put on hold the money cricket pays Zimbabwe cricket until the crisis they're experiencing is over. It can't be long now before Mugabe's rule will be over, and assuming things improve, the time will then be right for the cricket community to come to the party in a big way in an effort to help get Zimbabwe cricket back to where it once was.
My favourite cricketer.
Kevin Peterson is the new England captain. He is a superb, expansive, explosive attacking batsman. He made his first class debut back in 1997 for Natal before moving to England after voicing his displeasure at the racial quota system in place in South Africa and to further his opportunities for playing at international level. His English mother gave Peterson eligibility to play for England, and after serving a qualification period of 4 years, he was called up almost immediately into the national side. Peterson has the second highest run total from his first 25 test matches behind only the great Australian Donald Bradman, and quickly became the fastest batsman to reach both 1,000 and 2,000 runs in one day international. Now that's as good a start as you could possibly get to an international career. Peterson is widely portrayed as being cocky and confident, but who cares? This is the sort of cricketer England and the world needs. He plays a wonderful, entertaining brand of cricket. This, of course, was highlighted recently against New Zealand when he hit two sixes by switch hitting en route to 110 not out. While facing the bowling of medium pacer Scott Styris, Peterson turned his body around and switched hands, effectively batting as a left-hander, hitting two sixes over cover and long off. Because Peterson not only reversed his hands position, as some batsmen do while playing the reverse sweep, but changed his stance, rotating his body, these switch hit shots were immediately followed by calls to outlaw them from the game. More Kevin Petersons in cricket would make the game a lot better to watch. Let's just hope the England captaincy doesn't stifle his flair.
One question only.
Right, the question of the week comes from Ismail Mizra from North Carolina. The sudden surge in 2020 popularity and success this past year is deemed to be a positive step by most players, administrators and observers of the game. It is viewed by some, according to Ismail, that the two main powerhouses likely to catapult this form of the game to a global popularity level are the IPL and Alan Stanford. Do you believe these two can serve as key drivers in helping tap into the potentially lucrative North American market over the next 2 to 5 years? Well, it's an interesting question. It's one that I'm asked a lot. Thanks, Ismail. It would be nice to think that cricket has a chance to become a meaningful game in North America in 10 years. I reckon you're a bit optimistic by suggesting 2 to 5. But I'm afraid cricket's record, by comparison with some other sports like tennis and soccer, for example, is not good. Perhaps if India's IPL, Alan Stanford and Subhash Chandra's ICL were able to persuade the rest of the cricket world to get serious about making an effort in the States, there would be a chance of success. But remember, all of them are dependent on the world's cricketers to make a success of their own 2020 tournaments. In the meantime, the advent of 2020 is going to create a few internal problems for cricket, and until all the test-playing countries are all happy that they're getting their slice of the action, they won't be too keen on expansion. Alan Stanford may be the best chance. At least he's a Texan and should understand the North American market. Please don't forget to email your queries to tony@trickinfo.com. Don't forget to mention your name and the place where you're from. I'll pick the best question and answer it in next week's show. Thanks for your company. This is Tony for Cricket Fo Talk, signing.
The Tony Greig Show on Crick Info Talk.